All right, I think we are ready to go. Well, thank you so much again for joining us for the HIT Virtual Knowledge Group. We're pretty excited here at TAS to launch this new initiative. And really, the purpose of today's call is to introduce the concept of the Virtual Knowledge Groups, to talk about the purpose of them, how they'll function, what you can expect from TAS, and what we're looking for from the participants in the group, and then to begin talking about some of the issues within HIT that this group might want to address. But I think before we get started, if we could go around and just introduce ourselves, and if you'd like to talk a little bit about maybe your experience with HIT or why you're interested in HIT, I think that would be helpful to just kind of know where everybody's coming from. So here at TAS on the phone are is myself, Tracy Morton, Terry Hill, and Kate Stenyum.
Hi, this is Shonda Schrader. I'm at the North Dakota Center for Rural Health, and I work with our critical access hospitals, and HIT is just really a topic they're really interested in, so it helps to be a liaison on this group for them and just to bring back information.
Great, thanks for joining us.
Edwina Ducker from Maine. Likewise, the more information we have to support them in the transition through meaningful use and implementing their EMR to reach meaningful use is important, and I want to gather as much information and feedback and brainstorming from other people to broaden my knowledge and experience to support the hospitals.
Is there anyone else on the call?
Scott was on. Scott, are you on?
Oh, yeah, sorry. Yeah, this is Scott. I was on mute.
Okay.
I'm with the Hawaii State Office of Rural Health.
And Scott, you've had some experience in this area. You got one of the HIT demonstration projects, et cetera, right?
Right. Yes. We got one of the HIT demonstration projects, basically to implement open source EHR in a critical access hospital, and then we also used that to basically provide an EHR to public health nurses also.
Is anybody else on the call? Well, we're not quite sure what happened. Hopefully, people didn't have problems getting through, because this was one of our largest groups, and we've had good turnout. And this is our third virtual knowledge group, and so welcome. We're a relatively small group, and we know this is certainly a subject of importance, I think, for all of the State Flex programs. So we'll have this discussion. It'll be a smaller discussion, but we'll do pretty much the same thing we've done in the other groups, which is to talk a bit about the virtual knowledge group and then also start to identify what some of the key issues that we're seeing out there, and hopefully get the rest of the group more involved a little bit later. Task staff have been kind of divided between the groups, and Kate, you're the lead on this project. You want to just talk a little bit about what you're envisioning and how you intend to support it?
Sure. What we're envisioning, well, we can go over just, a little bit of the review of the group and what the purpose is. And, like Viv has already mentioned, this is going to be kind of the vehicle for the discussion for Flex-related topics, and this one obviously is specifically for HIT. And we're really looking to build knowledge through the shared experiences and all the lessons learned from all of the different states and, contribute to a collection of information resources and models. And I know both Edwina and Chada had both noted that is really why they're coming to this group and looking for this information that they can use within your state. This group will serve, as a key information group to provide input also to us, to TASC, and the Federal Office of Rural Health Policy, the Flex Monitoring Team, and other policymakers as well. I think if you've read through the information Tracy had sent out, you did mention we're really not looking, we don't want to be redundant with any previously established national groups, you know, coming out of NOSOR or anything like that. And we, again, are really going to be focusing on the topics and the context within the FLEX program. So what, you know, what we'll really be doing is we'll have this introductory call. We will be having calls afterward, after this, and we're thinking maybe on a quarterly basis for this group to get together. But then we're really hoping that the most of the information sharing will be done on the virtual knowledge forum, which will have a webinar coming on, I think, on June 17th to go over that, and that will be an area that we're really going to be pushing and utilizing for all these groups to be sharing information back and forth.
Thanks, Kate.
Mm-hmm.
I guess to expand a little bit on the FLEX program forum, and you'll receive some more information coming to your email about it. But the FLEX program forum is a web-based forum. You'll access it through the TASC website. And what you would do then is you would log in, and then once you've logged in and created your account and access, you can see postings that people have made discussing particular topics within the FLEX program. So you can comment on their discussions. You can share your own links or documents. It can be a site because it's secure to share even draft materials and get comments from each other. And I think it's just a nice way to kind of expand our FLEX program network. Some states have excellent working relationships with one another, but they might not know that somebody across the country or even in a bordering state is maybe doing some really similar work. And so I think it's just a way to kind of cast our network a little bit farther and keep talking with each other. Within the FLEX program forum, the topics will be broken down, or the postings will be broken down by the topic areas that are reflective of the virtual knowledge groups. There's five virtual knowledge groups, and they include emergency medical services, health information technology, health system development and community engagement, financial and operational improvement, and quality improvement. And so you'll be able actually to see if you aren't participating in the other groups or if you're participating in multiple groups, what the different conversations are that are going on within those different topical areas. So like Kate mentioned, we have a webinar coming up next Friday the 17th to kind of provide a demonstration of what those forums are and how to use them, and that will kind of be our official launch of the forums. To talk a little bit about membership, I guess, in these virtual knowledge groups, and it's the same actually for the forums as well. We really wanted it to be an environment for the FLEX programs to talk to each other. So participation is limited to State Office of Rural Health Directors, FLEX coordinators, other key state FLEX program personnel is kind of noted to us by that state, staff from Office of Rural Health Policy, from TASC and the National Rural Health Resource Center, from the FLEX monitoring team, from the TASC Advisory Committee, and then also other national federal grantee partners like the folks from Mountain States Group who work on the Delta Rural Hospital Performance Improvement Program. So that's who the group is limited to. We will, consultants and other experts aren't included in general membership of the groups, or and they won't have access to the forum. However, they can be invited to participate from time to time on kind of a limited short-term basis as requested by the group. So just a note there that this is an environment for you all to feel comfortable sharing information with each other and talking candidly about information and projects and pitfalls and things like that. And so we felt that, you know, limiting the scope to those that we just talked to, that I just mentioned, would maybe provide a good environment for that.
We also can request, I mean, if there are issues or are there resource people that we could use. For example, we could request that somebody from the Office of the National Coordinator, they've recently hired somebody apparently to lead their rural hospital initiative over there. And this is somebody who worked, my understanding is the Regional Extension Center in Michigan. So I think John Barnes has got some familiarity with this, I think it's a woman, from as I recall, And so we could ask her to join us from time to time. Somebody from OHIT, for example, somebody like Yale Harris, might be somebody that we could converse with as well. So the idea is that part of the agenda for these hour-long calls could be either an educational piece where people are, maybe Scott could talk to us, for example, about his experience when he did the HIT project in Hawaii. Again, not formal presentations necessarily, but just kind of sharing approaches. What's the experience with our regional extension center? What has been effective in terms of motivating them to work with us, to help the hospitals, et cetera? Those are kind of the ideas that we have. And then part of the conversations we're having kind of live on the phone would just be an opportunity to discuss a particular topic area, to get perspectives, et cetera. And kind of later in this call, we're going to start to identify some of the areas of concern, areas that we'd like to focus on, et cetera. And then we're going to get some feedback from the larger group about what priority we should give them and what are the things we should be talking about. Somebody just joined us as well. Could you, who just came on?
Hi, it's Mike.
Sorry. Hi, Mike. Hey, Mike. How are you?
Luke. Good. And by the way, the person you're talking about is Kimberly Lynch.
Oh, good.
L&T.
Okay.
And she worked for Altarum, and some of you may have met her during the COHIT evaluations because she worked on that team.
Okay.
So a little bit more about how the groups will function, and then we can discuss any questions or comments or concerns you all might have. Like I said earlier, we really want these groups to be about you and to serve your needs. So they're meant to be driven by activities and communication by the group participants. Participating in the group is totally voluntary, but we are looking for active participation and those that want to comment and contribute, share their stories and information. We thought that the best route to keep the group functioning and engaged would be to have a chair actually come from one of the state FLEX programs. So we've invited Kevin Driesen, who is the director at the office in Arizona, to chair the group. Kevin wasn't able to join the call today, though. However, we're also looking for kind of a vice chair so that in situations such as this, where Kevin can't be here to kind of lead the discussion or guide activities, that there's somebody else there in place that might be able and willing to help out. So if someone is interested in doing that, if you could contact either myself or Kate, that would be great.
Otherwise, we'll impose on somebody. We just want to make sure that there's somebody actually internal, as we set the agendas, as kind of to help facilitate the conversation, et cetera, as such.
And we're really hoping, like Kate mentioned, that the forum will be a useful way to communicate, and we can host through task support maybe quarterly conference calls if that's the way that this group decides that they want to communicate to. There's also email that we can use and establish an email group. And then one other thing to mention is at the National Conference of State FLEX Programs this July in Portland, Maine, this group will actually be meeting face-to-face. There's a slot on the agenda on the end of the first day, July 12th, for the group to come together and talk. And so that will kind of be the next sort of set meeting, I guess, for the group after today.
And the basic concept is not just to be kind of a free-for-all, but that actually the agenda will be structured in such a way so that you'll know as you come on what we're going to be discussing. We'll have, again, brief presentations or just discussions about what's happening one state versus the other, et cetera. So if something interesting is going on in your state or you have something to share, we'd want to identify that, put that on the agenda, and start to highlight it as well.
Are there any questions at all about what we've talked about so far, how the group will run, its purpose, or concerns?
Ed Wayne must be getting sick of hearing us. She's been on all these calls, so thanks for hanging in with us, Edwina. Let's talk about some of the issues that we're hearing, and I'll just invite our own staff to be involved from what we're hearing from the state FLEX programs. So from you too, Mike, since you're considered a participant here as well as obviously our program officer, what are some of the things that we're hearing as kind of major issues that flex programs might want to deal with, might want to be aware of, major issues that may have an impact on our critical access hospitals? So let's just begin the discussion. Scott, for example, what are you hearing in Hawaii?
What am I hearing in Hawaii as being some of the issues?
Are they doing? How are your hospitals doing in their journey to meaningful use and all that? You've obviously have had some experience with that open source kind of Vista product in the past. Where do you think the hospitals are? Are they jumping on board? Are they lagging behind? Are they encountering obstacles or problems?
Well, the hospitals that stuck with the system, they're doing okay. Their biggest problem is basically finding the IT person to help run the whole thing. But they're doing okay. The other critical access hospitals, because most of them belong to a larger system, they're lagging behind because the system as a whole is lagging behind. And while we had done this project with the idea that this would be something that could work for the Hawaii Health Health Systems Corporation, basically the one that runs 8 of the 9 cause in Hawaii, that they would be able to use this. Basically what happened is there's a bunch of management changes at the top, and so all the work that we've done for years basically trying to convince the top management of a way to go, that was replaced. The people that were in were interim for a couple of years, and it was tough to get them excited about it. And long story short, they're basically starting to move down the road to meaningful use now as a system. So that's sort of the situation that most of the hospitals are in now. So, like I said, the hospitals that stuck with it, they're much further along on the journey towards meeting meaningful use. And like I said, their biggest problem at the moment is basically trying to find the talent or the workforce that will continue on to take over the project.
So, in essence, you're identifying one of the key issues, and I think it's going to come up more and more, is that even if we're going down the road as, you know, we're using this open source software, or that in essence they're still encountering problems just getting an adequate number of people to work in the hospitals that have kind of a combination of hospital experience and IT experience. There are quite a number of people that are out there, but what we're finding is that it's difficult to find people who can really understand the clinical applications. I mean, hospitals are so complex.
Right.
You kind of have to have a foot in both camps in order to be effective. Is that kind of what you're saying? Or?
I mean, yeah, that is kind of what I'm saying. I mean, on the one hand, they still have the support from the university basically on doing the system, but they need someone out there for the day-to-day to run the thing, and it's basically tough to get that person to do it. And ideally, we'd like a clinical person trained in IT rather than an IT person trying to learn the clinical stuff, because then they are familiar with the vocabulary of the nurses and the doctors and everyone else. That would be our preference, but at the moment, you know, just finding anyone that's willing to basically work in, let's face it, it's also a rural setting. Although this one's at least on Oahu, so they could actually commute from Honolulu. But I'm just trying to find the that talent that basically has sort of a background in both.
Yeah, and that's pretty much what we've heard. For example, the SISU healthcare system, which supports about 20 hospitals here in northern Minnesota, basically says pretty much the same thing. They don't hire IT people if they don't have hospital background or clinical background, because it's just too difficult for them to. And they've got a staff of like 75 people last time I checked.
Right.
So it is, in fact, taking somebody with those skills and that want to, you know, go into a career path of information technology, and kind of bringing them up to speed is easier than trying to go in the other direction.
Right.
Another quick question for you is, do you have a feel, you said the others are part of that system, do you know what product, do they have a software chosen yet? Are they going with one vendor or another?
I don't know if they've chosen yet. I know that they were looking at Siemens, but I don't know that, I don't think that they've made a decision yet on who they're going with.
Okay. And sometimes that's another complicating factor, by the way, which is it could be that the software chosen by the bigger hospitals are designed more for that. They're more clinically based, et cetera. They may or may not fit in well with the rural hospitals, meaning that it may be more difficult to take Siemens, for example, and implement that in a rural setting than perhaps another software that's designed specifically for the rural hospital marketplace.
Yeah.
It's not that it's better or worse, it's just simply that it's going to take some time, and we're also finding that, you know, a lot of systems or hospitals, big hospital networks, are parking their hospitals until they work out, you know, first priority obviously is going to be for the big hospitals and clinics, because that's where the incentive money is, and that's where obviously their priorities are. So that's another concern, is this whole thing about what's happening with systems and, you know, kind of, are those do they have a priority of getting those hospitals to meaningful use in time to get the incentives and various things of that nature? Now, obviously, they've got some support, and they help to resolve, let's hope, for that workforce problem, but it creates some other problems as well.
Okay.
Edwina, in Maine, kind of tell us a little bit about the situation as you're seeing it. I know you're really interested in this topic.
Well, we have a very active rec, which I am working with, but we've been doing education sessions, which haven't quite worked out like we thought they would. And after the call, the rec call earlier in the week, or was it last week, you know, that really helped me look at the topics that we need to have on those meetings to give more value to the hospitals. Because like what Scott said, the EMRs are in place, but then now that you've got it, what do you do with it? Having the skills in place to be able to use the EMR, but also there are areas and enormous gaps, and CPOE, like a lot of people, a lot of hospitals, is a big issue for our hospitals. Particularly, we did a survey in 2010, and that was the one topic that they all needed staff training on. We have the ability to connect to our exchange, and with the Health Infonet and the REC, we are using some of our flex dollars to help them to connect to the exchange, because in that way they'll be able to hit some of the quality measures for reporting to the exchange. But it comes down to dollars with that one. It's a subscription for the year, and it's not an enormous amount of money, but it's, you know, it's dollars. 70% of our hospitals are part of systems. So, like what Scott said, even though they're part of systems, and to a certain extent, they support them, they'll have the same EMR, but then they're on their own after that. And some of our very, very small hospitals are struggling to get to any meaningful use of their EMR, even though they have it in place. So I think the problems seem to be common across the board for these small hospitals in Maine, as in Hawaii and other places, the dollars, the lack of skills of the clinical staff to be able to use the EMR. And I suppose that brings back to CPOE. All our hospitals report major issues with getting providers to use CPOE, and quite justified as well. It's cumbersome, it's difficult, takes time. So it's getting those IT skills into the hospitals are very, very important. Maine, and I know this is nationally, so Scott, maybe I'm assuming Hawaii applied for it as well, but the community colleges here in Maine applied for, it was through the HIT Act, to educate clinical staff in IT.
Yeah.
And we're working closely with two of our biggest community colleges to get that information out to the hospitals. You know, they give us brochures and we send them out. And one of the colleges, like the Southern Maine, they have a lot of enrollees, probably because it's Southern Maine, and they're getting people from Vermont and they're getting people from New Hampshire. In Bangor, the community college, not quite the enrollment as they have in the southern half of the state, but, you know, it's still getting there. But like everything else, you know, it's online. They have to give staff time off. So it's all those issues on top of everything else. Generally, I think our hospitals are getting there. They, according to our survey and according to our rec, our small hospitals, our 16 small hospitals, should be reaching meaningful use by the end of this year. Medicaid will not necessarily be able to pay them, but the rec feels that they will get them to meaningful use by the end of 2011, or at the very latest, early in 2012, which I think for our little hospitals is fantastic. We have four unaffiliated hospitals, totally unaffiliated, independent on their own, and we can't even get them to talk to the exchange. And I personally haven't had time to actually get into the discussion. As I go into the summer, we do a couple of face-to-faces, so hopefully we get a chance to talk about that some more and find out what the issues are. But overall, I feel that the vast majority of our hospitals are in a fairly good place. Like, they have different issues, but overall, I think we will get them there by the end of this year or early next year. Stage two should already be starting. We haven't even started the conversation about stage two yet. We're just trying to get them to stage one. And quite possibly once they start getting the incentive payments, which hopefully Maine won't delay too long, that will give them, you know, some cash flow to help them continue to work towards stage two.
Hey, Edwina, tell me a bit about how they're going to resolve the CPOE issue by the end of the year.
I haven't talked to the rec about this recently. We have a couple of champions that they're rolling out through our education sessions and through the, we do monthly webinars. And I don't know today, like the last conversation I had with the hospitals was 3 months ago, so I'm not quite sure what's going on with that. We have a next face-to-face at the end of this month, so I'm going to try and find out a little bit more about what's going on with CPOE in the individual hospitals. So I can't answer that question but hopefully by the end of June, I hopefully will know more about that, because that is the one big issue, CPOE.
You know, and it's interesting. Boy, I really hope they're far along as you think they are, or the RECs as they are, because I know you're counting on them. The survey that's being by the National Rural Health Association of Critical Access Hospitals nationally basically is coming up with somewhat of a different story in terms of, I'm not doubting I certainly hope maybe there's something in Maine, and maybe the regional extension centers or whatever are going to be particularly successful. But boy, as we're looking at the hospitals here in Minnesota and North Dakota, because we're part of the regional extension center, we would be absolutely shocked if half of our critical access hospitals reach meaningful use by the end of the year. So it's just kind of an interesting perspective. Maybe that's, there's just enough of a contrast between the states, and maybe you guys have had a head start, et cetera. But this whole issue is one that I think is going to be pretty interesting as it's rolling out. Can you tell me just another question? You said that you had an educational call that didn't go well. Can you tell me a bit about that call and why you think it didn't go well?
It was a face-to-face.
Okay.
And our rec, like, we're helping to fund that specifically. Like, it was for the private care providers, and then through the flex dollars, we had funded a separate workshop as part of that day for critical access hospitals. And I'm trying to find the information while I talk. And they had set up the agenda, and I went to that. It's only been our second one, and the issue was that we didn't, like, what I realized from being on that rec call earlier in the week, that the rec did more a big picture view, and I think, as we all realize, you're going to get them to these meetings if you give them the tools and the resources to be able to go back and actually do something. So from, you know, spending the day listening to what was going on, and the rec call, and Tammy particularly talking about her Four Corners meeting, I realized that we didn't have that hands-on champion information knowledge piece sitting at the table that they could talk to. For example, talking about CPOE, or talking about how they managed to do workflow, looking at how they're doing workflow and their processes at the point of care with their EMR. You know, that kind of stuff that really would help the staff and the leadership in the hospital to really go back and put things in place. And from listening to Tammy, that's the kind of pieces that they did at their Four Corners, unlike what we did, what the rec did, you know, that more higher level. It was fantastic, but it didn't bring it down to what they really needed to hear. We had ONC, we had CMS. So it was just, I realized the issues that had caused the non-attendance and the gaps in the education. So that's what I feel was the problem with our education session.
I appreciate that. Thanks. And, you know, and I know we've all made mistakes like that before. I agree. I think it's, they really want the nuts and bolts rather than the 30,000-foot overview. Although, you know, my own feeling is that they probably don't understand the larger 30,000-foot overview, but, you know, they want to get to work and they want to get these things solved. Kate, what are you hearing? I know Kate is really connected in so many different ways to the whole HIT community. She's helped the staff, our national HIT coalition, et cetera. In terms of other issues or things out there, what do you think, Kate?
Well, I do. I'm glad both Scott and Edwina brought up the kind of workforce and the skill set, because I actually just had a call this morning with some people from our HIT coalition workforce subgroup, and the Rural Health Research Center in that's located at the University of Washington has kind of been tasked with this from HRSA to do a study because they're feeling that there are still a lot of issues out there with getting HIT workforce out into the rural areas, even though, you know, with all the high-tech grants, there was quite a few different programs through the community colleges and universities focusing on this. So that, you know, like you guys had said, that is still a huge problem. Another issue that we've been talking a lot about through the coalition as well is kind of the finance piece. And we're working on developing kind of an overview for CMS on the specific issues with critical access hospital EHR finance. And some of it gets into really specifics, you know, looking at sort of things like depreciation, things that, you know, that they can use for depreciation and what they can actually put onto their cost report, et cetera, et cetera. But that is an area that I know that a lot of our rural and critical access hospitals are really struggling with right now. And, you know, to be able to get to their incentive pieces if they're on the road to meaningful use. So those, I know those are two kind of at least hot topics that I've been really following and we've been really working on over the last few months.
And just following up on the financial piece, Altarum is I think that's how you pronounce, has a contract with ONC to look at the financial aspects of both the incentives and also in terms of other financial impact on, you know, kind of ongoing operating costs, et cetera. Mike, are you involved with that project or have you been monitoring the Altarum one?
Yeah, sure. I've been provided advice on it. I have it. Also, Jade. We've been working with actually, Kimberly used to be on that project also. So between her and Matt Burke at ONC.
Right. And one of the things we talked about, I'm on that advisory committee, John Barnes is on it, and Lewis Wenslow and Lynn Dixon, and I think that's at least those are the people that I remember that I know. One of the things we talked about last time that Lewis is really articulating is kind of the ongoing costs of, you know, after meaningful use is used, is reach, how, what is it going to cost thereafter? Lewis is calculating that it's probably going to be at least 15% of whatever the cost of the equipment and software was, meaning it's going to be a substantial cost. You know, it's a cost center, basically, for these hospitals. And we're not quite sure that there's a really good understanding. And, in fact, depending on if you go for more of a cloud-based or internet-based system versus another type of system that might really require a whole lot more. It may have certain other advantages and features, but some of the more intricate ones in particular, you know, perhaps Siemens, perhaps Epic and some of the other ones, may in fact have a larger price or cost factor towards the end. So we're also trying to get a feel for that. What's it going to take? How many IT people is it actually going to require? And from what we're hearing, it's probably going to take more than one IT person. We're going to have to kind of upgrade that whole personnel piece of it as well. So that's, I mean, to some degree, that's just going to be the cost of doing business. And somehow it's not just finding the capital, and I guess, you know, kind of access to capital is still a really big one that we're hearing over and over again. You know, where are we going to get the money to buy this? And one of the things we talked about at that Altarum meeting was the fact that they felt that as they were interviewing some of these hospitals that are in their study group, that there were several of them, if not more, that had pretty much based their whole financial, their loan, repaying that loan, et cetera, upon reaching meaningful use in time to get all of the incentives. And so that's a little of concern if, in fact, it's going to take longer than some of us. I mean, there's obviously projections that it's not going to take a lot of time, the Regional Extension Center in Maine, for example, and some that are anticipating that's going to take longer than that. And if it takes longer than that, will those incentives be available? Will they be they're factored into the formula for repayment of loans, et cetera? So this finance piece seems to have a lot of different tentacles out there. And of course, if you're dealing with a pretty fragile rural hospital, the ability to go down the wrong path, purchase the wrong equipment, and back up again, or you don't have a whole lot of room to make errors, particularly if they happen to be economically fragile, which we see a lot of them are. So,
well, hey, Terry, the other problem you run into there is the cloud-based systems may not be reimbursable under the incentive program.
You know, that's a good point, Mike.
And that's something that, depending on how they purchase the services or the equipment, because it's cloud-based, they won't be able to claim on the cost reports because it's still a lease. And I've heard that come out of CMS in a meeting, but I haven't seen it in writing yet. So it is a concern.
Yes, I've also heard that, that they do not consider it hardware that they've bought, and there's the depreciation issue and everything. I've also heard that, definitely.
And the interesting part about that also is that when I was in Austin at the National World Health Association meeting, we had a dinner, basically Brock Slaybaugh and a few other folks from Torch, et cetera, Kwong No, and people who kind of know the business, et cetera. And this whole conversation came up about kind of the advantages of cloud-based systems, particularly because they have a much lower cost on the back end than on the front end. And, you know, I think Brock commented, maybe we should be encouraging rural hospitals, you know, that haven't chosen a system to be moving in this particular direction. But you're bringing up a big issue, Mike, that it may not even be reimbursable under their cost reimbursement, meaning there's a lot of uncertainties out here that hopefully will get cleared up soon. Mike, in terms of any other major issues, you know, we've talked about a few of them. We're going to actually kind of aggregate these issues we're talking about, and then we're going to send them out to the full group. We've got a lot of people who weren't able to make the call, and get them to prioritize. You know, basically, what do you think are the most important things that we as a group could be dealing with that are going to have the biggest issues, that have the biggest impact upon our critical access hospitals and their communities? Is there anything else that you're hearing over the – I think we've talked about workforce. We've talked about – I've mentioned the whole thing about the systems and the systems, their ability to help in a timely manner, et cetera. For example, I can tell you the biggest system that we deal with here in my local area is Essentia, which has hospitals, rural hospitals in, I think, 7 or 8 states. And what Essentia just basically said is we are going with an Epic system, and our critical access hospitals will start in 2 years. I'm not sure how prevalent that is, but I do think that systems piece varies from obviously across the country, and it'd be interesting to deal down on that one a little bit more. We've got the whole question of education, I think, that Edwina brought up, and I just think we're going to have to design education that is so hands-on that, you know, kind of gets out of the 30,000-foot view, which is essential at the beginning, and really gets down more into the trenches and kind of the how do we take a, you know, an RN working in a small rural hospital and help to, you know, train her or educate her or him to be effective with this. We've talked about finance piece, which has multiple tentacles, as I mentioned. We've talked about CPOE as being – that's always kind of been one that's pretty significant. I just throw – besides CPO, I throw in the quality reporting piece is another one that's that could very well be problematic. And we're not quite sure where that where that's going either. Anything else that you can think of that you're hearing?
At this point, I'll tell you that our big focus lately has been on workforce.
Mm-hmm.
And with that, is, the community college curriculum is due to be released from the pilot groups, basically to be used at any community college in the near future. It's a second version. So the idea is to try to expand that out to more rural areas. And try to get it, do the homegrown idea a little bit more. But there's also a secondary thought of trying to tailor the current curriculum into a single position, because you're not going to find some areas where that can take the time to go through all the coursework and have six different people to do these jobs. So the idea is to combine some of that too. And we've talked to OT a little bit about that. Hopefully we can get some movement on it.
Kate, is our minutes and everything going to Mike, or is he? We're keeping him in the loop in the workforce stuff.
Yeah, and I can send him the information that we had just, but it's the notes and stuff I just took this morning on this call with Washington.
Shonda, are you seeing anything? In we're running out of time here. Anybody else see anything? Any other particular issue that we're missing?
I think the only thing that, this is Shonda, the only thing that's really been coming up in North Dakota is the issue of different systems interfacing when
mm-hmm.
it comes to electronic medical records. I've talked to three CAUs today, and all three that I've talked to are looking at implementation of EMRs in the future, and all of them are different.
Hmm.
So that would be my concern, or something I'd like to take away, is what we can do moving forward in getting these to talk to each other.
Okay, good point. And if I can throw in another one that has been brought up by several people to date, and that is the whole issue of broadband capacity, that in essence we have some places in this country where there's going to be an adequate broadband capacity. And I think particularly as we move forward, I think in our Task 90 call we talked a bit about that, or Roger Holloway did, that it could be that we're going to need substantially more bandwidth, particularly if we get in the other stages of meaningful use, than we presently have. And even the bandwidth we have right now, I think, isn't going to be adequate for some areas of the country. Okay, good. Well, we're reaching the end of our time. I'll tell you what we're going to do. Kate, do you want to talk about the next steps on sending this stuff out? The list
sure.
of issues?
Yep, I will send out, I've been typing up the list of issues and then everything as y'all have been talking. And so I will get that sent out to the entire team. And then we'll also, because there were a number of people that weren't able to join us on the call today that have signed up for this group, we will be posting the call back online for people who want to be able to listen to this. And then we will be following up from there and having the webinar for the actual virtual forum on the June of the 17th. And I think, is that anything else for next steps, Tracy?
The other thing we're going to do is take all the issues and put them into an electronic survey that we'll send out to the group. And in that survey, we'll ask you to rank via a numerical score your kind of own order of importance, and we'll explain instructions for that ranking in the survey mechanism. But that'll provide the group, I think, with an overall kind of collective score of what issues everyone felt were most important or least important. And not that none of these are important, but maybe some guidance and direction for the group moving forward about how to begin, what work to begin, where to start directing some of the efforts. And so we'll send out an email survey. And then the aggregation of those results will be shared with the group. And then when everybody comes, or those that are attending the Flex conference, come face-to-face next month, we'll talk about those survey results there, and that'll provide a little bit of a springboard, I think, for the group to begin their discussions then, too. So bunch of different things coming from TAS to provide some support to keep the group moving forward. And then, as mentioned earlier, if anyone is interested in vice chairing the group, please contact Kate.
Any final questions? Okay. Thanks, everybody, for being on the call, and we'll look forward to seeing you in